Passing the Mic, the VC Exchange, influencing social change for women in venture capital and for female entrepreneurs. Real stories, insider knowledge, unlocking the power of diversity. With host Neil Dempsey, Managing General Partner of Bay Partners, ranked as a top 100 venture capitalist on the Forbes Midas list.
Hi, I'm Neil Dempsey, and welcome to the very first podcast of Passing the Mic, the VC Exchange. We started this podcast because we wanted to influence social change for women in venture capital. It's no secret that founders seek out investors who value diversity and recognize the success that comes from having diverse teams. How to make that a reality is unanswered. That is the big issue. It's unanswered. Personal experience. I've been in the venture capital business 25 years. It took 20 years to finally figure out that we needed a woman investor in our firm. Why was that? We're stupid. I'm stupid. We should have done it a long time ago. And we finally realized that we were overdue, and now we have that person hired. In addition, we have our mantra now is to have at least two women in the management team of our startups, and preferably a CEO woman, which we have. Our last couple investments have had women as CEOs. So that's the problem. 2% of the venture capital today has women in their organizations. That's a horrible paucity of lack of women, and we're going to hopefully do something about that. Today, we're chatting with Michelle McBain to learn more about her journey and her experiences in the VC world.
Today, we chat with a strong, successful female venture capitalist. We ask Michelle about female barriers to entry in venture capital. We discuss women founders seeking women funders and what needs to change in big academic institutions. Michelle McBain co-founded Startup Ventures in 2017 and leads investments in early-stage health and technology companies. She is passionate about working with amazing technology entrepreneurs, applying disruptive technologies to solve problems in enterprise, health, and consumer markets. Michelle has over 17 years in the VC world and has experience in product development, sales, and marketing in both engineering and scientific industries.
Welcome, Michelle. Tell us about your journey. How did you get started?
Sure. And thanks so much for having me here today. So I was, I'll call it an accidental VC. I studied business and engineering way back when. I worked for a large US-based corporate company. But throughout, which I highly recommend for anyone in their journey, you learn a lot at a larger company. You learn a lot at a startup, you learn a lot at a larger company. And so there's benefit to joining both types of organizations. And I think if I ever had any advice from a career perspective, is always work for an amazing person who's going to support you and champion you in your career. And if you don't, I've done it once. It's really a terrible experience and can make for you know, a few lost years in your career. So part of the process that this company had was to send you into a room for 2 days and do this deep dive into what you really were great at and what you really wanted to do as your next career. And your manager did the same thing. And so as we were trying to figure out, you know, would I go to a business unit and be a specialist, move to the US, or, you know, XYZ options. What clearly came out as a theme was that I wanted to work in a business unit where if I did something on one day, I could quickly measure and see what the impact was. And I wouldn't have to go into a meeting with 40 people for 2 days to figure out what was next. You could course correct and adjust and learn and modify. And so in many ways, what I didn't realize I was describing was entrepreneurship. And at that same time, this company had made an investment as a limited partner in a seed stage fund. And it was backed by Royal Bank of Canada, RBC, Battelle, like some really interesting groups, British Technology Group. And so it was a deep tech fund, seed stage, that was looking for ventures in the halls of all the amazing academic institutions in Toronto, spinning it up, getting the technology in a good place from a commercial perspective, and then putting a team around it. So so I'm like, I didn't know what venture capital was. I didn't know Neil back in the day. You know, he was a teenager back then, starting Bay Capital. You know, he's probably on his fifth or sixth fund at that point. And I didn't know what a secondment was either, because that's what was happening to me. But the role is described, and the people I met were just incredible. And so so I was seconded there for 6 months. I was supposed to go learn the ways of the VC and bring it back to the larger company, because they had a large pot of money to do different things to innovate. I ended up staying for 2 years. The work as I described and what it was and the people I was working with was just exactly where I wanted to be. And so you know, I always say you need to kind of open doors and see what's behind them. And, you know, it was a time in my life where I was able to do that. And I found what I love to do. So I was there at the end for 2 years, went back to the large corporate for a bit. They ended up being privatized. And so the money that was on the balance sheet to do all this innovation stuff was gone. And or became less of a priority. Another fund I worked with that really liked what I was doing, which was a Series A fund. They invested in one of our seed companies, said, we'd like to work with you and we're hiring. We just raised, you know, $250 million, come join us. And so that's how I ended up in life sciences doing Series A investing. So again, didn't really know life sciences, but really had a great connection with the leader of that fund, and I stayed there for 5 years. So that was my journey, and then a couple years off with my son, and then joined called 2010, the dark days of VC, especially in Canada. So I joined a seed stage fund, Mars IAF, and that's an amazing gentleman named Barry Jacare was leading that fund, and I knew I'd learn a ton from him, and I would love to work with him. So he's like the Canadian. He's the Canadian. He's the Canadian version of Neil Dempsey between us. But we ended up working together, and then StandUp was spun out, completely spun out of Mars IF in 2017. And so I've been working on StandUp since that time.
Thanks so much, Michelle. That was fabulous. Let me give you a short story about how I met Michelle. I was in Saskatoon, Canada, meeting with some entrepreneurs. And I met Michelle as one of the other venture capitalists that was in this particular meeting. And she told me her story. It was a woman-driven organization investing in technology companies just like mine. She, in a matter of a few minutes to an hour, convinced me that I was missing the boat, that I needed to put more money and more effort and more people into our firm that were women. And she is central casting for what we need to do in our industry. Small companies with great ideas led by women in the management teams and or its CEO. And that's really what this podcast is all about. Why do you think Toronto is a hotspot for women entrepreneurs? Is it possible to duplicate this ecosystem elsewhere?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one thing I probably should have mentioned at the beginning, the leaders of that first fund I was with were two women. And so I'm convinced I would not have been in venture if they hadn't been leading the fund. You know, they were looking for someone like that. I do believe there's been a number of amazing role models. And part of the reason we call the firm StandUp was a call to action for women to stand up and start their own company. And we also named it the fund after the little girl standing up to the bull on Wall Street, right? She's confident, she's courageous, she's curious, she's fearless, she's everything you look for in founders. And so we also wanted to make sure that people understood that you don't actually have to be a technologist to start a tech company. You could be just, a business person with an amazing business idea, and you can go find a co-founder or a technology person or figure out another way to get your MVP up and running to see if you actually have a business that people want to pay for. So the work we did, part of the reason that we were approached by an LP to start StandUp was 12% of our portfolio was in women-led or co-led ventures. And again, it was just really starting it and working at it and having a community that people could really tap into and dial into. And that includes, you know, all of our allies, because that to me is equally important. I will say, when I started stand-up, and a lot of people would come up to me and say, well, how can you judge? You have to invest in the best. And my answer to that's always been, well, you know, at the seed stage, there's no data. So there's nothing to measure. There's no KPIs. There's no multiple. There's no discipline you can apply from that perspective. So it really is a biased view of what you think is going to be a successful entrepreneur. I will often say that a lot of the women we work with are solving a business problem they've experienced, or they're productizing their consulting business. And I think just that ability to do that, the networks that are in place, the chance to talk to founders who are maybe living a similar experience to you, I think have maybe given Toronto, Waterloo, and we have investments in obviously Saskatoon and Montreal and Vancouver. These communities where they can come together and take a chance on this. So there's been also, from a federal perspective, a lot of support. And so part of our funding comes through Business Development Bank of Canada, which that funding comes from one of the Crown corporations. And EDC is another one of our LPs. And so that funding comes at a federal level into those groups saying, we want you to focus on women-led or co-led mentors. And so that just kind of bubbles up and creates kind of momentum for what we're doing. And we think seed stage is particularly important. I think, you know, once a company hits, you know, value inflection points, Series A, Series B, Series C, they can raise the funding. It's at that early stage. If you're a first-time entrepreneur, especially, where we find that there's a bigger bias.
Can that be scaled? Canada and the U.S. are very different in size and have different venture capital ecosystems. How can we begin this process to foster more women in venture capital? How do we start to make it better? Can we start off in smaller communities like Seattle?
There are definitely ecosystem elements that I think are important. And so as you know, the Toronto and Waterloo tech ecosystem is really well recognized. A lot of reasons are the academic institutions, as well as some of the large employers, you know, Shopify's, BlackBerry back in the day in Waterloo, all those sort of things. So there's that first piece is the element of the ecosystem. The next piece is people said, well, it's meritocracy that matters and you shouldn't give venture money to folks who don't fit XYZ. And so what we're trying to do with our fund is provide that data. And we publish the data to really demonstrate that there's actually some metrics behind all of this. So I think you have to have the fundamental elements of an ecosystem in place. And you see that in Saskatoon, you know, with collabs and the companies that are starting to come there. And, you know, they're growing and scaling and they're providing sort of an area for people to coalesce. So that's the first part. The second part, though, is, you know, when we publish our data around our portfolio and our deals and the makeup of that. And, you know, soon we'll start, we're going to have some pretty great value inflection points on our fund this quarter. And so we'll start publishing our data. So I think if you take that data and say, this is what we did, and this is what you can do, and these are the data points that are there, you're going to start being able to have a bit more of an analytical and purposeful discussion about, you know, all of our beliefs.
In the Valley and in most parts of the country, you'll see this traditional legacy play out in the technology sector. It first started with men who were accountants and lawyers, and then there were recruits of many brilliant students from prestigious schools like Stanford and Berkeley who dominated the industry. So unfortunately, the technology and VC ecosystem is mostly composed of white men. How do we begin to change this in places like Silicon Valley?
What I will say, there's an incredible community that's now come up, and it's not just for investing in women-led ventures, but it's women in VC. And so it's this incredible Slack community. We talked about it on our blog. there are probably 2,000-3,000 women that are in this community at all levels, GPs, analysts, but you have to be on the investment team to be part of us, sharing deal flow, sharing best practices, talking to each other. And I've seen other folks try and recreate this community and it wasn't successful. And so the women leading it put a lot behind it. I was chatting with one of them and she said, we treat it like one of our portfolio companies, right? And we think about it from a product perspective and what we're doing. And so the first step is having more women around the table. I mean, I think once people realize that they may be losing out on some deal flow because their investment teams don't reflect the group they're trying to service, we're going to start seeing more and more change. But as you know, Neil, it's a really hard business to get into, right? And so, you know, to start as an analyst, you're an employee, and that's one thing. But if you're a senior person who wants to come in and join a venture fund at a GP level.
GP level or general partner level.
It's not easy, right? You're A, committing for 10 years, and B, you're writing a big check at the front door, right? What other business asks for that? And so there are some big barriers to entry for folks for the venture business.
In your opinion, are you seeing real social change for women in venture capital?
So it's happening, you know, I say it's happening both from the bottoms up and top down. So I also chair the D&I committee at our Venture Capital Association, called the CBCA. I co-chair with this wonderful woman named Sophie Gupta. And one of our key initiatives this year, what we realized was students in the universities have no idea what private equity or venture capital is, much less so than in the U.S. And everyone wants to go be an investment banker or work in consulting, right? And so what we did was we created this program, and this is also for BIPOC talent. We're trying to get a whole different pool of talent at the early stages into venture capital and private equity, both into the alternative assets. And we also wanted the pool to be 50-50 men and women. And so we're doing a pilot program where these students are going to get an incredible experience as VCs, as an internship. And we want to, you know, our aspirations are to be the Kauffman Foundation kind of program. And we want those folks to go be the ambassadors back at their universities, sharing what venture capital is about. And I'll happily share the blog post from my amazing co-op students from last term. So we did a pilot with 10, and our goal is to scale it up because we wanted to learn from that, right? I mean, it's our little association with this amazing woman doing it on the side of her desk, right? And so we wanted to learn through the whole experience of recruiting, doing XYZ. We also realized, you know, we're probably not going to find many indigenous students at, you know, Queen's University, right? Which is one of the, you have to go where that pool of talent is and turn over the stones and identify some of those folks. So that's one of the ways we're doing an intervention. We're also, you know, as I said, Davina with us last year wrote an amazing blog post and she said, you know, when she started, my colleague gave her Venture Deals, which is the Brad Fell book. And she's like, she read it and she thought, okay, this is like, you know, just studying for the MCAT with, you know, grade eight biology. And so, but within a month, she knew everything in there and learned the business. And she's coming back next term and I can't wait to have her back.
So can you get them jobs?
I hope so, because they're going to now have an amazing experience on their CV.
That's a great way to champion the next generation. You know, you don't have to be a technologist to get into venture capital. People start companies with all kinds of different people from different careers or different industries. And women shouldn't be thinking they have to be a double E or a computer science jockey to start a business. You know, technology businesses are started by a lot of people and each one of the team has a different skill set. And the idea is to use all those skill sets to build the business. The CEO may not be a technologist, but the head of engineering, head of development, of course, is. So you shouldn't back away from starting a business because you're not, you know, a technology person. It helps, and you got to have them in your team, but you don't have to be the one that has that sort of degree. I encourage all women to take a shot at it if that's what they really want to do, and we'll encourage that.
Back to the Canada versus US, you bring up an amazing point that I'm just connecting the dots on. So the typical profile for a venture role at a US VC fund is you went to an Ivy League school, you did, you know, you worked at Google or Stripe, all of that. So until that breaks out, I mean, those are just self-fulfilling networks, and they're amazing networks.
That's true. Very true. But they aren't all the same. When Bay Partners hired me, I was not a technologist. I had started two companies before that were technology companies. The first two failed miserably, but, you know, those things do happen. Then there was a third one that was an okay success. We did take it public, and we had some of the similar investors, and they actually were pleased with the results. And then they asked me to think about joining them as a venture capitalist, working for them as an associate. By that time, I had figured out that maybe I had to try something different because I wasn't an overwhelming success as a CEO. But I was not from a brand name school like Michelle described. I was not from the Ivy League. I was from Seattle. I went to a state university in Seattle, and that was an unusual background for a venture capitalist because when I joined the firm, there was four other associates, and I was the fifth, and all four of those other associates were from Harvard, Stanford, Yale, and Duke or some other school like that that has a high prestigious count. But what I did was go out and found various opportunities to invest in at a rapid pace, and that's what venture capitalists do. They find opportunities and they bring them back to the partnership to have everybody else evaluate them and see if they're worthy of us doing a lot of due diligence and decide whether to invest in it or not. And my other fellow associates were behind that curve and didn't quite understand it. Venture capital is all about people. It's a people business, and you got to convince people that you are interested in investing in to want you as an investor, want your money, want your help and assistance. And I learned that quickly, and you know that was the key to the success of my early days in venture capital, and it's continued to this very day. So you don't have to have a perfect background to be a venture capitalist. You just got to work hard at it and meet a lot of people and make a lot of judgments and get your partners to help you to do that.
I will argue too that many of those VCs, and I think it's really changing now. I think there is some change, but one of our founders, you know, was told, well, you didn't go to an Ivy League school. You're married. You're a mom. You have three kids. Like, how are you going to do all this? You're never going to raise venture capital.
Michelle, do you think founders will be carefully looking at the types of venture capitalists that are funding them?
What I've found is that two things that we do. We look around the corners for the non-obvious deals. Melinda Gates has this great quote about, you know, until venture capital breaks out of funding the same folks they've been funding forever, you're not going to find breakthrough technologies, right? So we do that one piece. We try to find the gems. But there's also some competitive deals that are out there, and we're competitive, and you know, if the deal makes sense, we'd love to be at the table and be part of it. And so often we're brought in because of our fund, of our values, and particularly, and where we're really going to spend a lot of effort over the next 12 to 24 months around the community we're building and how we're bringing that community together. And so I've actually engaged someone who's looking at this from a very strategic level, and the gauntlet that my coach actually put out, he's like, go look at First Round. They did some amazing stuff from the founder community perspective, and strategically, like that is your North Star of how you want your community to behave and in the value you want your founders to extract from that. So Jess, who's working on this with us, is I don't want to overshare on it because it's not launched yet, but it's about, she benchmarked best in class communities, including YPO, including McKinsey, including AA, and like, what are the elements of a really strong community? So those are the things that we want to bring forward, and we have enough scale to bring people around the table to really make that meaningful.
What are the best ways to close the gender gap?
Yes. I mean, the other reality for any manager both private equity and VC is, you know, and I talked about how you grow it from the bottom and grow people from the bottoms up. This is coming from the top as well. And so one of our LPs is now the chair of ILPA. And for those who don't know what ILPA is, it's the Institutional Limited Partners Association. And so they put in place the best practices and benchmarks and templates. And so for the industry globally, in fact, for private equity and for venture. And so all of this work is her priority as well. And you'll see a lot more coming down in that area where when people are raising money, they're going to be in the deep due diligence questionnaire that we go through. There's going to be some questions on this. So that's, you know, the capital allocators at the top are going to have it trickle down. And then you're going to see this whole pool from the bottom of new talent, along with founders looking for these women had optionality, right? And so these women are looking for a VC that they want to work with. They have options. At the end of the day, it's a people business. You know, back to your initial point, it's super competitive to attract talent, right? I mean, I'm sure it's at every board meeting you're at. And so anything you can do to attract from a wider pool of talent is a win from a company perspective, right?
We've learned a lot from your experience, Michelle. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. Are there any final thoughts that you may have to share with women aspiring to enter venture capital?
It's the best job ever, honestly. You know, I always say, I'm my own boss at this point, but B, if you're an analyst associate, you are paid to learn. And you're paid to learn. Like right now, my team is deep into crypto, trying to figure out where we're going to play there, right? Because and Web 3.0, like and if you talk to other people outside of tech, they, you know, may or may not know what Web 3.0 is, right? I think we're in a bit of a, you know, our own little bubble here, but still, this is what's next. And so you are paid to evaluate the future and figure out where you're going to play and what you're going to do. And then it's a people business. It's about working closely with founders through the good and bad times. You know, a lot of founders will say, you know, it's the roller coaster, the highest of highs, lowest of lows. Sometimes it's in the same hour. But it's a really efficient way to spend resources as a company, both from a talent and a capital perspective. And so, so I feel very blessed to be able to work closely with these amazing founders. I learned from every one of them. So it's a super fun job. There's a lot of ways to get into it now. You know, it's much more democratized than it was in the past.
Thanks again for joining us, Michelle. Check out neildempsey.com to learn more about Michelle McBain, Stand Up Ventures, and our upcoming episodes.
Subscribe, comment, and share our show, Passing the Mic, the VC Exchange. Visit neildempsey.com to connect. neildempsey.com to connect. Mixed at Sound Lounge by T-Bone.